This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled, banged, and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something. I can really do this.
You're listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. This is Jason Staples from NoleDigest.com. We got a big show today talking about Florida State's sixth straight win over the Miami Hurricanes. Florida State wins 29-24 in very dramatic fashion. And we're going to talk, we're going to divide this into three segments. The first segment is just going to be some basic initial observations, and then the second and third segments, we're going to spend a little bit more time talking more specifically first about the offense and then about the defense before we wrap up. So let's go ahead into the first segment where we'll just talk about some preliminary general observations. And the first one is that this Dalvin Cook kid seems like a pretty good player. You know, he might want to stick with this football thing. You know, he has a chance of maybe making something of himself as a football player here. Dalvin Cook, really just an unbelievable performance in this game. 22 carries for 222 yards, all twos, averaging 10 yards a carry against Miami. Now, Miami came into this game, as we talked about on the podcast before the Miami game, the preview podcast. We talked about how Miami was coming into this game 123rd in the country on run defense, and that showed in this game. Although I will say, again, as always, you saw that Miami came in with more passion and more they were more sound up front than they had been really all year, and you could see that in particular once Jonathan Vickers, who is a good back, he's a nice back, but when he came in to spell Dalvin Cook, as a result of Cook continuing to have some issues with that hamstring, you could see that they were generally in position to make some tackles and so on, but Cook is just special, and his acceleration, his ability to be patient and then hit seams at full speed and accelerate through those holes and run right through arm tackles is just really unique. There are very few guys in recent years that we've seen, very few running backs that we've seen that have had that kind of ability. Todd Gurley last year for Georgia, obviously Leonard Fournette and Nick Chubb, who unfortunately had a catastrophic knee injury yesterday. But overall, this was just a real further coming out party for Dalvin Cook, who honestly, he was not even 100% in this game. And frankly, one of the reasons that this game ended up as close as it was because Cook's hamstring cramped up at one point. And that actually is really the second general observation I want to get to. And that's that this game, when I came in and in the preview, I talked about how I thought that this was an interesting game because in a lot of ways, Florida State could have, I thought coming into this game that this game could be one of two things. Florida State could start well and potentially put Miami out early, knock Miami out early, and Miami could potentially quit because Florida State was the better team coming into this game. And so long as Dalvin Cook played, Florida State could potentially, if they started well, turn this into a rout and blow this Miami team out. But if they let Miami hang around and maybe Miami got a lead early or whatever, then this would be competitive and Florida State would have to really hang on because Miami had the players and had some things that they could do to cause some problems for Florida State in this game. And actually, I think we really actually saw both of those things, that both games kind of played out in a lot of respects in this game. Florida State started out like gangbusters. You could see that Jimbo Fisher, as always, has been taking the Milton Berle approach through the first three, 4 weeks. and really didn't show everything. We've been saying this all along. There's been complaints about, oh, Jimbo Fisher's offense is too complex, or, oh, you know, they should be running this and that. I don't understand why they're not doing this. And we kept saying, and I kept saying on this program, you have to understand the long-term plan here. You have to understand that Jimbo Fisher doesn't see the need to pull out every package and to show everything to beat Wake Forest or Boston College by an extra couple touchdowns. That does them no good. There was a lot, and there continues to be a lot that they're holding back. Fisher understands how college football is long term, how college football is won. He understands that you have to be able to beat your rivals year in, year out. They spend extra time on Miami and Clemson and Florida in the offseason, have extra stuff devoted to preparation for them in the spring, in camp, in the bye week, all of these things. They've got those extra bits of preparation ready to go. They, you know, they had the defense preparing extra for certain things that will plug right into preparation for Georgia Tech. This is just how they work. And for him, he doesn't see the reason to show all your best stuff, to show the couple gadget things that you've got ready, to show the orbit motion package that they used in the first half in particular, but used all game against Miami. They hadn't showed that all year, but they had several nice wrinkles off of it. It's one of those things that he likes to be able to bring in stuff that a team has not prepared for, has not seen as much, and to go against tendencies against rivals, because he knows that can put a team off balance and you can steal a quick touchdown or two as a result of doing that. That's what Boston College did to Florida State the last couple of years. This year they weren't able to do it because they can't score on anybody. But Florida State has lots of teams do that to them, and Fisher wants to be able to do that against his rivals. So, you know, a lot of the complaints that I've seen and heard over the last few years and watching, well, you know, they're just not blowing teams out or whatever. Some of it, they could potentially win by another touchdown, or they could put a game away just a little bit more if they busted out this or that package, but they're not willing to do that. They want to win with their base packages as much as possible and then have that stuff ready for their rivals. And we saw that against Miami. But at any rate, Florida State came out like gangbusters and had multiple opportunities to double tap Miami effectively. You know, if you go to the zombie genre of films and television and so on, you know, you have this double tap idea that, you know, you don't get stingy with your bullets when you're in a situation where you're not sure if the zombie's dead. You make sure you put an extra one in the head. You just go ahead and take care of it so that zombie's out. Well, Florida State had several opportunities where Miami was down. They'd been shot. They were down on the field. They're the zombie that you're not sure whether they're going to come back or not. And Florida State had the chance to double tap and just never was able to get that done. They were never able to get over the hump and put this game away early. They had several opportunities. I mean, they started out 14-3, and it could have been very easily 21-3. I mean, the difference between 17-3 and 21-3 was that pass to the sideline out to the flat to Kermit Whitfield on that quick out pattern. Golson didn't throw the best ball, but it's a ball that Kermit really needs to catch. Remember, that was initially called a touchdown, and then the call on the field was reversed. It was close, and I think it was the right call. But that was one opportunity to go up three scores, 21-3. And 21-3 is a lot different than 17-3. And we could see why, because on the next drive, Miami was able to hit a big play, actually beating Jalen Ramsey and what was really the upset of the night. Ramsey was in perfect, well, not quite perfect, and I'll address that in a moment, a little bit later when we're talking about defensive stuff, but he was in excellent position to make a play. Rayshon Scott did a good job of creating space on a back shoulder throw, It's a play that LaMarcus Brutus was there to make. He wasn't able to break up the pass. Winds up, there's a good bit of luck there. It's a 58-yard touchdown, and suddenly it's 17-10. 21-10 again is more than that's where the being up three scores makes a difference, because they score there. It's still 21-10. It's still a two-score game. But 17-10 feels different, and you call it differently generally as a coaching staff, because you know that you're not just a touchdown away from evening the game out. And then on that next drive, let's say it's 21-10. That next drive, the only reason that Florida State doesn't go up 20, doesn't have 28 at the next drive, at the end of the next drive, is because Dalvin Cook, who gets the ball first and 10, Dalvin Cook goes for what looks to be initially like a clear 71-yard touchdown, and then pulls up lame, clutching that left hamstring, gave everybody a scare. And instead of a 71-yard touchdown, you have a 35-yard run, good run, but now that drive winds up stalling. They end up getting stuffed on the fourth down play. That was not necessarily the best call. Again, we'll talk about that in the second segment, but they're basically a hamstring cramp away in that case from having 28 points on those first four drives. So they're a drop away and a hamstring cramp away from 28 instead of 17 to 10. So at worst, they should have been up there. If you just execute reasonably well there, and you don't have a hamstring cramp, they should have been up 18 at that point. Then they get a three and out against Miami. They get and they get an opportunity to get down into the red zone again, and they're not able to punch it in. They kick a field goal. I mean, this game could have been 35-10 at the half, and that game's over. It probably should have been 31-10 at the half. And again, at 31-10, that game is over. Miami is out. It's going to change the way that the game is called. It's going to change the way the game is played. But this team at this point just hasn't learned to have the killer instinct. They missed those key opportunities to put Miami out and put them down completely, to knock that team out. They just missed every opportunity to knock them out. That said, this is still progress for Florida State. It's still progress because last year, in what should have been a better team than this year, and actually right now, I'm not sure that this team, this Florida State team, isn't better than last year's Florida State team. But last year's Florida State team, they weren't just having trouble closing teams out. They were coming from behind every time. So those teams were falling behind and then having to rush back and win narrowly at the end. This team isn't doing that so much, although they did have to come back late because they allowed Miami back into it. This team has been playing from ahead pretty much all year. So that's progress from last year. So, you know, the old saying is, you know, lose big, lose close, win big. That's the progression as you take over and build a program. Well, what Florida State's done is they won big, and then in the rebuilding process, they've kind of gone through the come back to win close, play from ahead to win reasonably close, and then the next step of that is to learn to have that killer instinct to put teams out like they were, you know, a couple years ago. Now, again, we're not going to see that 2013 team anything like that anytime soon. That was an all-time team. It's just all the stars have to align to have that kind of team. But you still can put teams like, you can still put games like this away by making one or two plays there. And it didn't have to be 31-10 for this game to be over. All they needed was one of those plays, one of those three opportunities in the first half. One of those three opportunities, you capitalize on that, and this game's over in the first half. And then from that point on, they're attacking, and they're able to do whatever they want on defense and so on. But as it stands, they just aren't quite there. Now, there's not much else to complain about in this game in terms of for Florida State fans, because the team in general showed a lot of progress. In talking about that, let's go ahead then and flip to our second segment, where we're going to talk a little bit about the offensive side of the ball. And once again, this is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. And now we're talking about the offensive side of the ball in Florida State's 29-24 narrow win over Miami. And talked about it last week. Talked about it a lot last week. Last week we saw against Wake Forest, when you watch the tape, there was a lot of improvement on the offensive side of the ball, particularly from quarterback Everett Golson. Last week against Wake Forest, it didn't show so much on the scoreboard, partly because Dalvin Cook was out, but you could see that Everett Golson was understanding what Jimbo Fisher is asking from him in the confines of the offense. He was no longer looking lost. He looked like he was kind of getting it. That he took some huge steps forward after that bye week coming into the Wake Forest game. And then he took another step forward in this game. And the offense in general took another step forward in this game. And the step that he took in this game was he looked like against Wake Forest, he was starting to get things. He was starting to understand things. In this game, it looked like he was no longer thinking. It looked like he understood the concept such that he was able to just play and respond to what he was seeing. So he was still late on a few throws, but not as much, not as often. And there were times where he was just playing, he was just making athletic plays. He was making quality throws within the confines of what he was asked, where it was clear he's understanding conceptually why this call works against what they're showing and why you work this side against what coverage they're in and why you check to this side on the run and why I should throw to this guy here in this context because of what they're in. It looked like he understood and managed the game on all those things exactly the way that Jimbo Fisher wanted him to do it. And if you look, I mean, his final game stats, very, very impressive. Looking at it now, 25 of 33 completions. I mean, that right there, that's 8 incompletions. A couple of them were throwaways. I think you had one huge drop that would have been a touchdown. Dalvin Cook had a chance at another touchdown. Again, not putting Miami away, and you know, you can't really quibble too much with Dalvin Cook's performance in this game. But when you look at how Golson played, this is a guy, one throw in particular, that third down throw on the drive that they came back to take the lead in the fourth quarter, the third down throw to Bobo Wilson, where he threw it, he actually changed his arm slot to throw it around Chad Thomas, Miami defensive lineman Chad Thomas, and stick it between two defenders and hit Bobo Wilson in exactly the perfect passing window. That's the kind of throw that a guy makes only if he's starting to feel comfortable in an offense and only if he's starting to feel comfortable with the concepts and is reacting athletically. Huge positive sign for Florida State. And we've talked about this in the past. Everett Golson in the past has been, you know, good Everett Golson and bad Everett Golson. Well, this was pretty close to great Everett Golson. The only thing separating him from great Everett Golson was having a little bit more success down the field on a couple shot plays. But they really didn't do a whole lot of that in this game. But the bottom line is, I mean, he played exceptionally well. And there was another touchdown, and this is, by the way, a good example of why Florida State, I had a podcast earlier last week about a serious pet peeve of mine where people are complaining about why young wide receivers don't play. Why aren't Florida State's young wide receivers playing? Clearly, they're going to be better than the other options. Well, we saw a good example of why in this game. It was another opportunity for a touchdown on the drive that wound up, if I remember right, it was on the drive that wound up getting stuffed in on fourth down. So this is a touchdown drive otherwise. So it's a drive they didn't come away with points. Basically, Everett Golson made as good a throw as you can make on a vertical concept. There was either a three or four verts. I don't know what the other side was doing, but you had two verticals on the right side, two vertical routes, and you had Ermine Lane on the outside, and you had Auden Tate, a tremendous prospect. I love him as a prospect at that wide receiver position. 6'5", 215-pound freshman prospect, freshman wide receiver. Kelvin Benjamin-type ceiling for this guy. Huge mismatch in the red zone. Great opportunity to put him on the field, and he's been showing signs in practice of being ready. So he gets out there. Golson does a great job of going to the opposite side of where the safety's going. Goes to the good matchup. Tate has the advantage in the slot. All Golson has to do is throw that vertical route kind of toward the back of the end zone. And Fisher does as good a job teaching this as any quarterback coach in the country. What they do, they want the quarterback to throw it such that it's high, so that if it doesn't get caught by the wide receiver, it goes out of the back of the end zone. So you want to sort of throw it to the back of the end zone at just the right angle, so that if it doesn't get caught by the wide receiver, who, you know, he's the only one who can catch it. And you want to put that right in that area. So you put it right over top of the defensive back. Put it where the receiver has to go up and extend to get it. And if he doesn't get it, it goes harmlessly out of the back of the end zone. It's a no-risk throw in the red zone. And if you've got big targets, it's a great no-risk throw very low-risk throw because you have a physical mismatch there. The problem is that, again, you have Auden Tate. Right, this is just a vertical route. Nothing you have to know about that, right? No, that's actually not right. You have to know where the ball is going to be thrown. You have to run the route just right to make sure that the timing works, to make sure that you're going to be in position to make the catch when it's there. Tate pulled up on the route. He passed the defensive back and started looking back for the ball and started backpedaling instead of running to where he was supposed to be. He looked back and then tried to high point it backpedaling. If he just runs another step and a half and turns, that's a touchdown, because that is a perfect throw from Golson. Excellent touch. And instead, it goes off of Tate's hands. And actually, Tate deflected it into Ermine Lane's hands, who was startled to see the ball, and he didn't catch it either. But that was another opportunity, and it just went to show Golson, even on one of those eight incompletions, you're looking at a perfect throw for a touchdown that was dropped. And would have been an easy touchdown had the young wide receiver run the route properly. So two of the eight throws that Golson missed in this game, two of the incompletions, were touchdowns if the receiver just makes an easy catch or runs the right route. So Golson played about as well as he could have played in this game. Major progress. And if he continues to progress like this, then this Florida State team probably is a playoff team. It's going to take a little bit more. They're going to need to get a little bit more from the wide receivers. Ideally, they get a little bit more in terms of maybe getting Mario Pender back to help support Dalvin Cook, particularly as they're going to need to be real cautious with that hamstring moving forward. Maybe getting Jaquez Patrick some time. There's going to need to be some growth around Golson as well. But if he continues to take the steps forward that he's shown the last couple weeks in terms of understanding what they're doing offensively, this may be a playoff team. They're not a playoff team now, but they may be by the end of October going into November. This is a team that's starting to look very different than they did at the beginning of the season. And one other thing I want to bring up, Bobo Wilson and Kermit Whitfield deserve a lot more credit than what they've been getting. First of all, Kermit Whitfield has become a better route runner and receiver than I ever expected him to be at Florida State. He's not just a track guy at this point. He's running smooth routes, he's getting himself open, and he's generally catching the football. You had the one where, again, I would have liked to have seen him come up with it on the goal line, but it's a tough catch. Had another one where defensive back got his arms in there on a corner route, again, a very good throw. You want your guy to come up with that catch, but you understand when he doesn't. That's one that more often than not you're not going to get. It's good play by the defense. But Whitfield played very well in this game. But Bobo Wilson continues to come up big when it's needed, and particularly between the numbers. He's made a lot of big catches over the last couple of years on the defensive interior. Where most receivers are hearing footsteps and so on. He's had his drops, no doubt, but he's really been instrumental to Florida State's success. And you could see that particularly on that long third down conversion and some of the things that he did in this game from the wide receiver position. And you can see how much they want to get him the ball in space because of how they were using him in that orbit motion package and so on to get him the ball on those bubble screens and all that. And we saw some of the other stuff, some of Everett Golson's legs in this game, using him on the speed option. He still missed the read on two read option opportunities where he kept it on one, where he should have given it, and then the next play he gave it when he should have kept it. Fisher was on the sideline after, I was reading his lips where he said, trust your eyes. And Golson still has to trust his eyes a little bit on those zone reads. So there's still a little bit to clean up. But offensively, this Florida State team is starting to hit a little bit of a stride here. And as they're able to add in some of the young wide receiver talent like Auden Tate and George Campbell and some of these other guys, and we did see some of Pig Harrison in this game, even though he didn't have a catch, he was out there and he's finally not wearing a knee brace, so he's starting to get back to where they can trust him. And we saw some good things, some good signs from Maven Saunders as well, who they wanted to incorporate a little bit more into the game plan for this in this one because of what Miami where Miami has some weaknesses, and also just to continue to get him more comfortable as a weapon in this offense. He and Ryan Izzo were also productive wide receivers, productive receiving threats from the tight end position in this game. So this offense is really growing as we go. Now it's going to be interesting. They're playing a much better defense against Louisville this week. But the offense is definitely improving, and it's starting to hit its stride a little bit as Golson is getting comfortable. And again, the one other thing, this is Golson. Golson now has gone through five games and hasn't turned the ball over. That was obviously the concern coming into the year based on how he finished last year. At this point, we can say this is a clear trend. He's protecting the football better, and it's not just about not turning it over. He's not making throws that should be turnovers. It's one thing if you're just getting a lot of defense passes that aren't getting intercepted. It's one thing if on a couple occasions defenders are getting their hands on it and maybe it should be an interception, but it's a tough catch. He's not even throwing balls that have a chance of being intercepted, and that's a bigger deal because it shows he's understanding his role as a game manager in this offense, and he's doing a terrific job with that. And as they're able to get him more comfortable, take a few more shots with that strong arm down the field, use his legs a little bit, this offense then becomes pretty dynamic. So a lot to be excited about on the offensive side of the ball, very close to a 50-point kind of performance in this game. I mean, they just didn't quite break through on a few of those opportunities early in the game to they should have had 35 at the half, 31 at minimum at the half, and they ended up having 20. But it's only a matter of time before you start to see the scoreboard start to reflect the improvement that you're seeing on tape. That's what's going to happen as you get here. I mean, they average 7.8 yards per play in this game. That's elite. That's elite even against an average defense. 7.8 yards per play is elite. And they're getting there on offense. And just like I said after Wake Forest, it's only a matter of time before what we're seeing in terms of the improvements starts to translate even more onto the scoreboard. And that's just a matter of punching it in when you get into the red zone, making one more play here and there. They're getting there. Now, they're going to have their work cut out for them this week, but they are getting there. And once again, this is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. This is Jason Staples, your host. And we're going to do one more segment here. We're going to be talking a little bit about the Florida State defense and its performance in this game against Miami. Florida State again wins a home game against Miami, over Miami, for their sixth straight win in the series, 29-24. And they gave up 24 points, and it could have been more. They had a few key stops. One of the things we've talked about so far in this program, though, is how the offense didn't take advantage of their opportunities to put this game away. The defense, though, was in the same boat. There were a couple opportunities the defense had to put this game away. Specifically, Jalen Ramsey seems to have inherited Ronald Darby's hands from last year. He dropped a clear pick six that would have put this game away in the second half and had his hands on another one that he could have come up with. Where, you know, these are plays. Jalen Ramsey is the leader of this team. He's the best player on this team. And yes, that includes Dalvin Cook. He's the best player on this team. But he needs to make, and as the best player, he needs to make those plays. Those kinds of plays are the things that you expect your best player, your team leader, to make. And to make matters worse, he actually got beat on that 58-yard touchdown where he was in terrific position and was back-shouldered on a later route as well. And what I noticed actually in those cases, and this is probably what Miami noticed on tape to cause them to go after him in those cases, is Ramsey actually is so good and is so instinctive as a corner that he was too in phase as a cornerback. Now, to clarify that terminology, when you're in coverage, in one-on-one coverage as a cornerback there, or as a defensive back in general, there's a term that's used where you are in or out of phase with the wide receiver. And what that means is it has to do with where your body is relative to the wide receiver who's running upfield. So on a vertical route, let's say you just have a takeoff route up the field or a fade route up the field. A cornerback who is in phase is on the hip of that wide receiver. A corner who's out of phase is trailing behind that wide receiver. So he's actually out of phase. He's disconnected with that wide receiver. And you want your corners, as a rule, to be able to keep connection with the hip of that wide receiver and stay in phase so that they can't just throw it past you. And also, as a rule, if that receiver throttles down, if you're on the hip, then you can kind of sense that hip begin to sink and you can match that up so that you can turn and make a play on the ball. Ramsey was actually even with the hip. And with a guy with his length and with his athleticism, and particularly with his speed, I think this is something they'll be able to clean up this week. They'll look at it on tape. He actually needs to be a little bit more confident in his speed and get slightly and improve his position by about 6 inches. I would like him to be on the backside of that hip. With his length, he can do that. Be on the backside of that hip. You see Richard Sherman do this generally. Instead of being even with the hip, you want in phase for Jalen Ramsey is going to be just on the backside of that hip so that when they back shoulder, he can just hit the brakes and throw his back hand up and break that up. They're going to have to go through him for the back shoulder, and then if they're going to try to throw it over him, he's got the length and the ability to accelerate to get to that ball off the backside of the hip and make a play. So this is where I think they'll be able to fix this. This is just a small technique thing. This is, you know, polishing up a very, very small technique issue that he can fix. And some of it is the result of him being such a good athlete and such a good corner, such an instinctive corner, that he's basically running the routes for the wide receivers, which means that, you know, he can actually get himself in too good a position almost. And that's where he was on both of those plays. So, you know, otherwise, the defense, I thought, again, showed quality progress. The defensive line won this game for Florida State, limiting Miami to 1.1 yards per carry, limiting Joseph Yearby, who's an excellent, excellent running back, to 2 yards per carry on the game. That's just tremendous. The Florida State defensive tackles dominated this game. Niall Lawrence Stample, DeMarcus Christmas, Derek Nnadi, those guys dominated the Miami offensive line on the interior, and there was just no space to run. DeMarcus Walker had, I think, his best game as a Florida State Seminole, both on the outside at the defensive end position, where he didn't lose contain but was still able to compress things and force things to those defensive tackles and the linebackers, who also played well against the run. He played tremendously well. Giorgio Newberry played extremely well. You know, the whole defensive front played very well. And Walker is an absolute load. I've said all year that I think he's the best three technique player on the team. I think he's the best rush defensive tackle on the team. And that much has shown. And they're moving him inside to that defensive tackle spot, in that dime rabbit package where they have he and Newberry on the inside as defensive tackles, has just been tremendous. And it was tremendous again. It was terrific again against Miami with a strip sack again, this is an opportunity that the defense had to potentially put that game away with the strip sack. And Walker does a tremendous job getting into the backfield, getting the strip sack, and then somehow doesn't get the fumble recovery despite being on the football. And Josh Sweat doesn't see the ball right in front of him. It was another opportunity for that to be a turnover, and it wasn't made into a turnover. You know, it's a difference between this game being out of reach and this game being close and having to come back and win late in the game. So, you know, it's just... Again, this is a zero turnovers on either side. The defense needs to do a better job when they get their hands on footballs to make recoveries, to catch the football when you've got an opportunity for an interception. I thought the effort level was excellent, but you would expect that in a Miami game. So overall, the defensive performance was excellent. That said, in the pregame analysis, the one place where I had expressed concern, and this was also in my pregame write-up over at Noel Digest, was if they could get Stacy Coley or Herb Waters in the slot manned up against Tyler Hunter, then I thought that was a potential mismatch for that Miami would be able to manipulate and benefit from, and sure enough, it was. Stacy Coley ate Tyler Hunter alive. And, that, you know, again, that's not... There's a reason that Tyler Hunter was not a five-star prospect and Stacy Coley was when you look at that matchup. Now, I don't think Stacy Coley was actually a five-star guy. I think he's a high four-star in terms of what he should have been. But there's a reason for you know, there's just a talent differential between those players, and you don't want Tyler Hunter manned up against Stacy Coley. But this is where James Coley, the offensive coordinator for Miami, did a good job using formations and motion and so on to get the matchup that he wanted. Florida State was trying to hide Hunter a little bit on the inside there, and they would motion to a trips formation that forced Hunter into a one-on-one against one of those guys, and then took away some of the deep help with, again, formation. So is good coordination on that side of the ball, and then basically it's a one-on-one situation, and Hunter gave up a lot of plays. But the thing is, without Trey Marshall on the field, without Nate Andrews healthy, Florida State was pretty depleted in the secondary, and you could see the result of that. I don't think that those matchups would have been as easy to get or to create for Miami had Florida State had Trey Marshall, where, you know, they had a good plan for using Trey Marshall and Derwin James on the field together, where one of those guys was often going to be rushing. Derwin James, they were going to use a lot in a pass rusher role on third and long, in particular on long yardage in those dime packages this week, and they weren't able to do that all that much because Marshall was on the sideline and Derwin James had to take his role. So you had some dominoes that sort of moved down from Nate Andrews being hobbled and not really ready to play, and then... And then Trey Marshall ejected. And I do, by the way, think that ejection, even though I hate it, I think it's a bad call. I think it's a bad interpretation of that rule. I think if you're going to be ejected, it should be for actually targeting above the shoulders, and he didn't target above the shoulders, or using the top of your head, the crown of your head, to actually make initial contact, you know, lowering the head and using the crown of the head. And he did neither. But the way that that rule has been interpreted and enforced all year is if it's not with the face mask itself, then it's an ejection. And that was consistent with the way that that's been interpreted all year in the ACC and the SEC, et cetera. I think it's a bad deal. I don't think that you should be ejecting guys for tackling with the shoulder first and having the forehead of the helmet hit. You know, there's a difference. I think it should be targeting only if a guy is clearly spearing or if the contact is above the shoulders. And I think that needs to be cleaned up. But as it was interpreted, I think it was consistent with the way that this has been called all season. In any case, without Nate Andrews and then with Trey Marshall being ejected, you had a domino effect where you got some matchups that the Florida State defensive coordinators, or where Charles Kelly, Florida State defensive coordinator, and the Florida State staff in general just didn't want to get those matchups, but they got them. And, you know, tip your hat to Miami for creating those matchups and taking advantage of them. They also took advantage of another one that I was afraid of, which was Reggie Northrup, man-to-man coverage against Joe Yearby. They weren't able to do much with that because Florida State was able to do in keeping their safeties back. So they had safety help so that the wheels and things like that to Yearby in that kind of situation weren't going to be effective, which was really important. And they were able to do that because the defensive tackles dominated. But they did get a key first down late as a result of Yearby getting, turning Northrup around in coverage. This is where you saw the lack of Terrence Smith in those places. But fortunately, the next couple weeks, they're not going to need Terrence Smith. You know, you'd like to have him against Georgia Tech, but Northrup is capable against Georgia Tech. And Louisville is not especially good on offense, passing the football. So you hopefully can give Terrence Smith another 2 weeks and have him ready for Clemson. But ultimately, you know, I think that they did a quality job scheming up for what Miami was able to do. They got a lot of pressure on the quarterback. I think, you know, Kaya is a very, very good quarterback. It's the best passing attack, really, in the ACC. I think they are a better passing attack than Clemson. And, you know, at some point, you tip your cap. They had certain things ready. Florida State had some weaknesses as a result of some injuries and some other aspects. You survive that. You're happy not to get those matchups in every other game. As you get Trey Marshall back, as Nate Andrews gets back, as you get Tavares McFadden and some of the younger talent prepared for some of those situations where maybe you put them on the field in long yardage if there's going to be a mismatch there. And honestly, by the way, I think if Stacy Coley doesn't hurt himself on that last touchdown catch, I'm not sure that Miami doesn't win this game, by the way, because of how much of an advantage he had against Tyler Hunter in the slot. Once he went out, Hunter was no longer, there was nobody that they had that they could put at that level of a mismatch against Tyler Hunter, which is a good sign because there aren't a lot of Stacy Coleys in the ACC. And Florida doesn't have a Stacy Coley either. So if you're thinking about that, you know, there aren't a lot of those matchups that you're going to get. Hunter is generally a decent coverage guy, but Coley was able to put him in, again, Coley's speed is very high level. And he was able to create some bigger issues because of that extra speed. So, you know, I think long-term Florida State's defense will be fine. I think as they get some guys healthy, as that secondary continues to gel, as some of the young talent continues to step up a little bit, I think they'll have solutions for when teams decide to try to get similar matchups. And again, they need to make sure that guys don't get ejected for targeting. I mean, this you just have to adjust to it. But overall, I think this was a quality performance by the Florida State defense, despite the fact that they did give up 6.2 yards per play, 425 yards. I thought they played well. And you could really see the way that defensive front, ultimately, they dominated the game, and they changed the game late. The length up front ultimately made it too difficult for Kaya to be able to get clean throws, two deflections in the last four downs that before Miami went gave up the ball on downs there in the last drive. And one of the ones that was not a deflection was an overthrow. It was a missed throw because Lorenzo Featherston's length had caused Kai problems, and he couldn't get the ball out in the proper window, so it ended up being a bad throw. So three of the four final downs on Miami's final drive were impacted by pressure from the defensive line. So that's a big difference from what we saw last year. I think there's, again, a lot of positives to take away from Florida State defensively in this game. This is a team that right now they are not one of the top five, six, seven teams in the country, but they could be one of the top four teams by the time they wind up playing Clemson. And it's going to be interesting to see. That game's going to be a war. It's going to be interesting to see how Florida State comes back emotionally after this win and how what they look like against a Louisville attack and a Louisville defense that looks very different. But again, you can't really say anything a whole lot negative about six in a row against one of your rivals. And Florida State fans should really make sure that they enjoy this, because you know this is the kind of thing that eventually these sorts of things wind up evening out over time. But Florida State, 27 in a row in conference. Go ahead and enjoy it, Seminole fans. Well, that's going to do it for us today. Just before we get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. And, of course, Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio. You can catch more of my stuff at Noel Digest. And make sure to catch our next podcast, where we're going to spend a little bit more time breaking down what we actually saw in this game on tape, some of the other things, doing a little bit more specific stuff. I'm also going to start doing a little bit more, some feedback from last week is that it would be good to do a little bit of an educational segment each week. So make sure you catch us for that. I'll have at least one segment of that this week. Again, I am Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a Bsporto channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.